Tweet, tweet, 2022 edition of Poet Radio on WGXC. My name is Chris Funkhauser, host of this monthly program since 2015. This month's show features recordings I've made of the great poet and anthologist Jerome Rothenberg. I've recently returned to Rothenberg's crucial anthologies, Technicians of the Sacred and Symposium of the Whole, and other works such as Prefaces, in conjunction with the writing project I have going, and doing so reminded me of the absolute brilliance of his investigations over the decades. To paraphrase Allen Ginsberg, Jerry's work in collecting primitive and complex poetry from around the world has saved the rest of us a lot of work. Jerry is someone I first met at Naropa in the late 1980s, but who I got to know more closely beginning in 1992 due to my connection and indeed friendship with Pierre Joris, an important professor of mine when I was a doctoral student at SUNY Albany. In the early and mid-90s, Rothenberg and Joris worked on the poems for the Millennium anthologies, which amazingly document globally minded poetry and poetics. And in the process of doing so, Rothenberg made several visits to Albany, where he participated in seminars, gave readings, and socialized with the local community. The opening piece of the program, which you heard moments ago, was a segment of Kurt Schwitter's performance piece Ursonata, specifically the fourth movement. In addition to the Millennium anthologies, Joris and Rothenberg also edited a volume of Schwitter's work titled PPP, Poems, Performances, Pieces, Proses, Plays, Poetics. This piece, as well as the next segment I'm going to play, was recorded at a salon at the home of Pierre Joris and Nicole Perafit in December 1995. The first volume of Poems for the Millennium had just been published, and the two were working on volume two at that time. Incidentally, for anyone interested, I conducted an interview with the editors a day or two before the salon, which can be found in the archives of the Electronic Book Review. Later in the program, I'll also be playing some excerpts from a brilliant 2019 reading given by Rothenberg at Bard College, but for now, let's stick with the 1995 Salon event for a bit. Here, Rothenberg is reading a piece called A Paradise of Poets from his Seedings book, and then a poem from Michael McClure, a prolegomenon to a poetics.
One. He takes a book down from his shelf and scribbles across a page of text, "I am the final one." This means the world will end when he does. Two. In the Inferno, Dante conceives a paradise of poets and calls it limbo. Foolishly, he thinks his place is elsewhere. Three. Now the time has come to write a poem about a paradise of poets. And then sometimes I wonder why are we so hung up on poets?
Or paradise. Or paradise.
Right. But it goes on. This is a poem dedicated to Michael McClure, and it's the only poem I think I've ever written since the computer makes it so easy, you know, along the center axis. And it's called Prolegomena to a Poetics. Poet man who walks between dreams. He is alive. He is breathing freely through a soft tube like a hookah. Ashes fall around him as he walks, singing above them. Oh, how green the sun is where it marks the ocean. Feathers drift atop the hills down which the poet man keeps walking, walking a step ahead of what he fears, of what he loves. Why has the poet failed us? Why have we waited for the word to come again? Why did we remember what the name means only now to forget it? If the poet's name is God, how dark the day is, how heavy the burden is he carries with him. All poets are Jews, said Tsvetaeva. The God of the Jews is Jewish, said a Jew. It was white around him, and his voice was heavy, like a poet's voice in winter, old and heavy, crackling, remembering frozen oceans in a summer clime, how contrary he felt, how harsh the suffering was in him. Let it go. The poet is dreaming about a poet and calls out. Soon he will have forgotten who he is. Speak to the poet's mother. She is dead now. So many years ago, she left her father's clime, his father, too. The tale of wandering is still untold, untrue. The tale of who you are, the tale of where the poem can take us, of where it stops and where the voice stops. The poem is an argument with death. The poem is priceless. Those who are brought into the poem can never leave it. In a silver tux, the poet in the poem by Lorca walks down the hall to greet the poet's bride. The poet sees her breasts shine in the mirror. Apples as white as boobs, says Lorca. He has fed the milk of paradise, the dream of every poet man, of every poet bride. The band plays up. The day unstops and rushes out to greet another night. Is the black poet black? And is the creation of his hands and throat a black creation? Yes, says the poet man who wears three rings, the poet man who seeks the precious light, passes the day beside a broken door no one can enter. Hold it shut, the god cries, and the Jew rolls over in his endless sleep. Gods like little wheels glide past him down the mountain road where cats live, in a cemetery guarded by his father's star, a poet and a bride entangled in the grass. His hands are black, his eyes the whitest white and rimmed with scarlet. Hear the drumbeat, heart. The blacks have landed on the western shore, the long-lost past of poetry revived. Our fingers fail us. Then tear them off, the poet cries, not for the first time. The dead are too often seen filling our streets. Who hasn't seen them? A tremor across the lower body. Always the image of a horse's head and sandflies, a woman's breast and honey. She in whose mouth the murderers stuffed gravel, who will no longer speak. The poet is the only witness to that death, writes every line as though the only witness.
You have been listening to poems read by Jerome Rothenberg, which I documented at a salon reading in Albany in 1995. And now I'll turn to a more recent event I recorded at Bard College on the 2nd of October 2019. To me, this was a truly old school reading, lasting more than an hour and completely held an audience attention the entire time. In this longish set, now you will be hearing poems from recent collections, Mystery of False Attachments, A President of Desolation, and Field on Mars. There's an interesting connection between the previous recording and this one, in that Rothenberg here dedicates another poem, A Deep Romantic Chasm, to Michael McClure, a poet whose work I admired and that has been featured previously on this program.
From The Mystery of False Attachments, I'll just read a few of the poems. This comes out of my Facebook experience. Where there's a little space for those of you who do Facebook, asking what's on your mind. And if you go into that space, you can get background color designs, and then it will print a very limited number of words. So that's a kind of constant adjustment to get into that. I guess it's a little bit like the Twitter experience, though I have not really gotten into that. And it also automatically centers the lines. So for those of you who are familiar with the work of Michael McClure, it's like Michael McClure poem in that sense. And so I began to post first small fragments taken out of longer poems of mine, and then adding to it new verses. And I'll read just some of them, skimming through the book. I open up my mouth and hear a multitude of voices. It doesn't matter if the rhyme is slant or straight. I feel it on my tongue. My eyes see through it. Into the homeless state, the lines of poets move, not hardened yet into belief and other acts of cruelty. I is an other, gaunt and somewhat turned into the light. I threatens to return, is hungry now for power as for love. The force of age startles the half-formed man, the vestige of the younger life the mind still can't pry loose. Love, like intelligence, opens a door to let us in, taking as a sign the names of God engraved in amethyst, a counterfeit infinity. The mysteries of mind laid bare in talking, discovered first, then lost, the way all times are lost when no one counts them all. A miracle of darkness hides the light, itself a miracle in which infinities escape us and we plunge on in hot pursuit. The President of Desolation, book of poems, also written over the last 10 years, and broken into sections, different series of poems. And the opening series is called Further Auto Variations. And auto variations, I began in the 1990s to write poems using vocabulary from poems by other poems. It's a system for how to pick out the nouns. And as a follow-up to that, I began to use the same process to work over poems of my own. So picking vocabulary, nouns, from the earlier poems, and using them to compose new poems. So Further Auto Variations, subtitled Reminders of a Vanished Earth. The poem as landscape. The definition of a place is more than what was seen or what was felt before when dreaming of the dead, the way a conflagration wrapped itself around his world, leaving in his mind a trace of dunes, a fallout from a ring of mountains, reminders of a vanished earth, the landscape marked with rising tufts, a hardness of clay tiles that press against our feet like bricks, the soil concealed beneath its coverings through which a weave of twisted wires crisscross the empty field as markers to commemorate the hapless dead, the ones who fly around like ghosts bereft of either home or tomb in what would once have been their world. The count fades out beyond 10,000, leaves them to be swept down endless ages, fused together or else set apart, lost nomads on the road to desolation. A field on Mars they wait to share with others, dead at last. Never done counting. Enclosed by matter, all my thoughts scream for prophecy. When I wake up on Mondays, the night sky is hanging above me, galaxies shedding their images, fading unknown in the half-light, a light that confounds me. Nothing we know is unreal, and nothing is real. There is only the face of a woman lying in the sun and a voice that cries out in a language like French. When she raises her arms, they look distant and lame. Something there that won't work but falls flat against me. I will follow her up to the moon, will watch her paint herself red with no sense of the distances still to be traveled, no clock to adjust to, but numbers that show me the little I know, the way one vanishing universe shrinks till it swallows another. There are worlds here hidden from sight whose ends are like their beginnings. The world in daylight turns dark, a blaze of noon caught in their mirrors as the sun slips through our fingers, never done counting, where the globe has dropped out of sight. A deep romantic chasm, this was dedicated to Michael McClure. Head facing downward, I descend the chasm, little caring about space or time, my face caught halfway between dark and white, a mix of random chance and kindred circumstances, before I reach the bottom of a narrow street alongside which I spot a darkly churning stream and follow it until I reach its source. Here is a world outside of time and season, rhyme and reason, only broken by the sound of ghostly birds that blast us till we find that we've arrived nearby a field behind a battered wooden fence. The specters in that world stare out at us, move back and forth until they cover the horizon, come forward, forward, rising in their legions. All they have to offer is a turn, a word, a sound that we can hear and answer in return what has long been known but left unspoken. Words from inner space, the tongue turns off, the dead will learn to speak again. The universe is theirs and covers them until they flee at morning. Leave us in a dream still, faces awash with dew. This will be the final book. The poet dreams or writes, whose home is in his mind or maybe elsewhere, follows it around the world to where it leads him, a space forever dark and air so heavy that he cannot push through it or recognize the faces waiting for him as before, too distant to pursue, the world once full of smiles, now dark with tears. I am not he, the wanderer, the captive, the one who lives his life as in a dream, the messages that reach him from a dying galaxy, fall on deaf ears, echoes of an empty sky, the final world bereft of sounds and images, returned to what it was, adrift and mindless, the grim memento of an absent god. It is grim. A number of years ago, I wrote a series of poems tied to Goya's great work, Caprichos, the Caprichos. And later on, I will say at the urging of Clayton Eshelman, I turned to Goya's Disasters of War. The Goya is magnificent, but it sets off thoughts and images. And so I'll read a couple of poems from The Disasters of War. But it begins with an epigraph, actually from an older poem of mine. He is a real man. What he murders, is he not? Sad presentments of what must come to pass, a rage of shredded clothes, the darkness through which images rain down, a ruined world of bricks and walls, erased or crumbled, shattered, spattered on the broken ground, made present by an unseen hand like mine, the lines concealing men and women, children, trees and gardens, grass, gates, gravestones, shrines and temples, classrooms, radios and books, old dresses, fifes and fiddles, heirlooms, bicycles, eyeglasses, sidewalks, monuments, engagements, marriages, employees, clocks and watches, street signs, works of art. The man's face shows it, chest and forearms swollen, stumps the legs, the cry of blood, so fierce it stops his heart. His eyes see only lines like knives crisscrossing, blood or rain. The word is misery that blinds him where the waters rush and rage. And toward the end of the series, the image from Goya is a
a woman outstretched at the bottom of the picture, lying, looks like it might be a flag, and strange figures surrounding her. And Goya titles it, that's Goya verbalism, titles it The Death of Truth. And that struck me as relevant into the present. Truth dies faster than the blur of faces, goggled men and broken bodies wrapped inside the shadows each one casts, a lie that traps them while the bride lies flayed, the scraps left that the mind eroded cannot grasp. Those who have died for nothing die for truth no longer, but construct their own, for which some weep, some hold a broom or rake to scrape the ground around her, daughter of the dust, hardly awake, that over her the dark deceiver hovers, keeper of a lie that leaves her pinned and helpless at a time when lies again take over, that the mind eroded cannot see but holds as true. This is his time and ours. The lie triumphant triggers our belief and lets it die as she does. And the next poem is called At the Hotel Monopole. And there's a photo that goes along with it that shows Mr. Hitler standing on a balcony with his hand raised in salute. The Hotel Monopole, it says, in Breslau, also called in Polish, it's real name, Wrocław. There's a visit that we paid in, it must have been 1989, traveling in Poland, Diane, our son Matthew, and having come from Krakow that day, and then stopping at Auschwitz on the way to hotel reservation in Wrocław. And the opening poem, the introduction to the poem itself, tells the rest of the story. No, 1988. It was raining when we got to Wrocław. The miles from Auschwitz bringing back the memories of what had happened there. Traveling with our son, we had made reservations for a single suite at the Hotel Monopole. But when we pulled in, the hotel could only come up with two separate rooms. After a while, though, the desk clerk said that they had found a suite for us that was free. An elderly bellhop carried our bags up the central flight of stairs, threw the big doors open, put our bags down on the floor, and asked me with a little smile, "And do you know who slept here?" Then he answered his own question, "Hitler." And he made a speech from that balcony, after which he turned and closed the doors behind him, leaving us to think again about our fate and theirs. In the room where Hitler slept, dreams didn't come, but sounds broke from the walls and cracked and cracked, made us stare down past our feet, the dance beginning, while over our heads the lights would flicker, 1, 2, 3, 4, brought to life. We stepped out of his balcony and hailed the crowds, hard faces, 4, 2, 3, 1, theirs like ours, our fingers flapped above our lips, looking like hairs, bunched up, touched by his tongue. The rain falls upside down from iron boxes. The dead outside the ring surround us. Cousins fallen bird-eyed where the rain, like tiny knives, opens their wounds. Children and rain, The red-faced killers reach up to the man, the victims without faces broken underfoot. 4-1-3-2. I hadn't been there, where the lines of gymnasts marked to the sounds of open flesh. For them, his face is golden, old as time, and echoing the cry of what can never be reborn. The other century still fills the air with sounds and colors, fills my mouth with half-chewed words. Long past the time to get it written, what returns at night is the reprise of total death. Without a stone unturned, unthrown, the bodies drop like logs into a global pit, from and through which little deaths run wild, the bones imploding in his throat to feed his pleasures. Dante, no less cruel than Bosch, the cries of fancy silencing the caged imagination, turn the killer upside down, and from his mouth the burning babes will drop, the distance between life and death reduced to silence like a world in cyberspace. Birds come to life and scatter with the dead, reach for the dead, but lose all touch. What ugliness unleashed and rising, where we sleep, open to the times, the rhymes, the hells he leaves us. To enter like fools into the killer's dark dance, feet on marble floors and still alive. I want to sound it, pounding on the walls, to hear my voice like his bounce back to me, time beyond time. It was how we danced there, pranced and ranted in the open air, then fell into the bed from which his ghost blew empty words. The hapless dead were with us. Auschwitz, only miles away, Treblinka coughed them up, the cousins sundered by the killer's whims. Their faces weren't faces, more like masks of masqueraders, mysteries we carry, scratched into the heart and mind. The mouth falls open, laughter breaks the spell. The children dance with us and die. The dream scream won't end. Who are the others here? What others join the dance? The hokey pokey dancers, primed to kill. Across the century, their dance won't end, but follows us from room to room and back again. A manga world, the hated faces crammed into a child's mind, never to be erased, but slowly magnified. How many arms are raised, how many mouths engulf the burning babe, wiping the spit away, the fire's rage again. Again, the legions promenade. They watch his pale hand rise and fall. Savonarola's burning.
Again, you are listening to Jerome Rothenberg on this month's edition of Poet Radio on WGXC. Here's another poem from the Bard Reading.
This is written with the main title, America 2018. Whitman's poem to the States, very powerful, anti-American poem for the 16th, 17th, 18th Presidentiad wrote. And this is for the, I suppose, the 45th Presidentiad. It gives the title to the book, The President of Desolation. And when the man came into the presidency, it seemed ridiculous, and people began to quote the famous quip of Karl Marx's of farce replacing tragedy in the history of the state. Farce replaces tragedy. The President of Desolation. Again, it's in a few number parts. I'll drop out the numbers, just the words. That farce replaces tragedy, obscene even to think it, and yet to come into another age and find it proven true. This is the price of growing old, the progress truly of a state of mind, America the center, both of mind the gap and mindless space. Not farce, but madness from the start, the roots of tragedy embedded in the hot, barely human, ready to bring us down, to which he leads us in a dream almost as deadly as a tunnel. The mind winds through, seeing the sky ahead, but kept from it by stumbling, tumbling, where the face of someone like a swollen clown steps forth, whose fat cheeks grow enormous while his body shrinks, until he stands before us like a tiny naked man who neither thinks nor dreams. When in the morning sun his face escapes into the empty mirror, he must ask the sky to bring it back to him. Hapless to find his way, the rage inside him slides into his mouth, from which he vomits words and empty sounds, being the only meme he knows. He is the cockeyed boss, the president of desolation, chin thrust forward, arms akimbo, legs astride the world, his carousel. A body without shape that shrinks and drags his mind out through his eyes, whose teeth will clatter, syllables cut free. With this, the world will end and time return to endless space, not to be counted past what the fabled start was and the end to come. While down to earth, a fool sits on the throne, a king by his own counting, wrapped in gold, the ground beneath him also gold, the buckle on his belt, even the belt itself, the buttons on his shirt, all gold. Gold is his heart, the rumble in his gut, gold's essence blowing golden farts, and on his golden briefs, a stain of gold, for which all women flock to him, all men bow down, his ring is gold, and held against your cheek leaves gold behind, not truly gold, but close enough to make his suitors pause, his dross turn golden in their sight. How loyal little men become, losing all thoughts of sacrifice and of ardor for the common good. In acts of cruelty, the past comes back to life, never more true than when he wages war against the sky. The door to heaven opens, closes at his touch, fat angels crowd around him, some adhering to his flesh, the burning babes and fancy dreams of God and power. With an eye that turns from those below his notice or regard, the world his mirror, fragile hands hiding his face and eyes, too safely blind, he will not see you now or me outside his dreams. He stalks his shadow and his only love, the voice returning when he dies, only to call his name out to the world at large. He trumpets it until his tongue can bear no more. The lump inside his throat grows daily like a broken pump, is caught up, clots of mud, cold clumps adhering to his flesh, his plump hands pushing them aside. Like vagrant babes swarming around him, drunk on visions of himself, he sucks them up and down his maw, then out his rump until he dumps them soundless on the ground, the clown of cruelty, mad fantasist, an empty vessel, blind as any fool. Deeper down the hole he digs for us by digging, pit where pity drops away, letting the dead stay dead or raising images too cruel by far, the scorn a frail man spews into the air until the world around him bursts with voices calling back, repeating endlessly the words he shows them, trolling, finding the hidden hole, his fingers fat and swollen, open in his mouth, then raises one frail arm in feigned salute.
Jerome Rothenberg with a salient poem from A President of Desolation. We'll conclude the program with a poem titled A Book of Dreams, a 2017 pastiche written for Robert Kelly's 82nd birthday. On this occasion at Bard, Kelly had introduced Rothenberg and was in the audience. This will bring us to the conclusion of the program, and I wanted to mention before signing off that those interested in hearing more of Rothenberg's work may do so by tuning into Penn Sound, which has a vast array of his works in its archive. Till next month, you are listening to WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, Poet Radio.
A Book of Dreams for Robert Kelly. One, the way her knee swells and she feels it, swelling, and it turns into a babe's head. No one has a countenance more rich, and no one has a mouth that opens wider, lets a sound like dreaming come into the room in which they wait. Two. In the night, men go fishing for stars. Not a god, but a babe wields the trident, cables lie covered with smut, light erupts on a screen. What you see is your face, and the face that you see, old and blind, is a face from your dreams. Three, better for the mind to empty out in dreams the way a body falls thrown from a passing train forsaken. They hold a place between them on its rim, a graven image. God is pain. Four, the air has grown destructive, finds a way to bind you, fat and swollen, an old angel with flayed wings. The searchers in the night drift past you. You will walk among them, will give them solace only in your dreams. Five, the room in which the man is sleeping splinters halfway through his dream. He feels a flow of images escaping from his eyes, imploding, coating bed and floor with colors like a show of lights in space, a spectrum half unseen, unsought. Six, gardens blossom where a hand digs deep. The rows of laborers, small men forgotten like the names of towns, men with the wind, bright words like Bella, brace their dreams, their days degraded by inane lavoro. Theirs are forbidden thoughts. Seven, hand in hand, the dead walk in a line, hoping against hope like children. It is enough, it is enough. It doesn't last. The false commanders lead the charge, the story started in a dream is winding down. Eight, French dolls like ghosts step forth at midday. Everyone is sportif, geared for speed, never to turn a shoulder to name a game for love. Their aim is circular. It follows where you lead them down a secret path into a basement shattered by your childhood dream, a lurking hole, then up the back stairs, lost to sleep. Nine, in the dark dance, sightless, they are tearing at a bone, their jaws like bears' jaws, cavernous, their fingers dripping porridge, clawing at each other's nipples, keepers of a dream. The blind man sees no flame or smoke, but knows it all by tasting. Ten, the cavern of the universe widens each morning, my head fills up with dew. The father writes, having no home but where his shadow leads him. In greasy shirt sleeves, heavy lids, blotched faces, the men pursue a trail of tears unbuttoned, captive to a dream, a stateless galaxy, the deeper sky, a field of images, measureless and mindless, absent their god. 11. The man with a hole in his eye sees anew. A sphinx fingers a sphincter. She exudes false colors. The night once was pink, it is now black and white. now foul in a corner, spitting his death out, a substance first dreamed, then stuck under his tongue. The war goes on forever. 12. Release me, feed me. Whose design this is, they do not know. But cling to cyberspace as if it held a clue, the outline of a village filled with snow or circumstance. The wise man runs from it like poetry or dreams. 13. Love, like intelligence, opens the door to let us in, still blind and searching, taking as a sign the names of God engraved in amethyst, a counterfeit infinity, not letting time pretend to halt the darker flux, impediment to where we set our sights. Here's a place to hang a flag, and there a hat to pull a flag from. All your little men are watching, waiting for a dream. There is no predicting summer, but it always comes. 14. Those who are masters needn't talk, but signal with a secret nod or wink, concealed assassins brought into the mix. Involuntary tears, a dream of execution, smoke rises between our teeth. The ones who loved us die, not one by one, but now in masses, the presence of the dead in every corner. 15. Inside the house, its walls down, ground into a dust that only the dream sustains, who once were once alive, do not arise, but one by one, by snakes, their hands are swallowed, almost enough to make you suffocate, to lodge like mercury under your tongue. 16. Our dreams were of suns, of vermilion dragons, spangled with gold from Sumeria, pronouncements and omens concealed to take death as a tribute, a slave plunged in water and drowning, becoming a wife to their god, a scorpion, then a chimera. Coda to a book of dreams, then familiar lines from Shakespeare. Oh God, I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space, were it not that I have bad dreams. No world more clear than what we see in dreams, nor more amazing, numbers bursting into stars, and stars enriching what we learn when dreaming. It is no more than this, to sleep and be a master of the universe, not to be bound to earth, but gathering a trillion other worlds, to count myself a little king stepping aside for time. Nothing is measured that the mind can fathom waking, in the way your body beckons when I turn to touch you, coming from a black hole deep in space and time, I learned to count the deeper images and those still deeper, gods and angels dancing on a pin. Before the dream turns bad in which a pin holds all we know and all we fear, I stretch out flat to the horizon. I arch above you like a lid. I vanish and return. My name is death. The word extermination resonates. Nothing escapes. The world itself ends in time beyond all time, where time ends, leaving the residue behind of mindless space. And still more mindless images, the nightmares the mind conceals. To run from time isn't a choice. The stars we see are overwhelming and block the view, or bring up images of light and dark flickering across the map of time, a flow of sand in dreams. And the next is also for Robert Kelly, because we were speaking about it earlier. These are from the Licht variations. One. The weak reproach of someone's membranes painted yellow. Dust kicked up by snakes whose pale eyes match your own. What schemes we live with face to face. The mold of years, the blood of tyrants, and the fire cleansing them of doubts. Pan plays for them, brutes that the sun rains down on, that the time allows, they slide and slither from the bottoms up. Snake skins that the dust entombs, the wasteland covers, legends grow apace, convulsions rise, and laughter matters. Atop a mountain, stones are hammered down, stone after stone. The sun ignites the air, a carnival atop a mountain, and a show with wagging tongues, stones touching stones and casting shadows, stones in heaps, the luck of brothers binding brothers, fire in the sky, a heap of stones, and how a hammer raised aloft can signal joy. Our sorrow is carmine colored, like a kiss squeezed tight with tongues, a kiss or something hot inside our mouths, a ritual of blood driving all creatures mad, even you. Her breast comes open, spilling dust and rust around her, skinny virgin whom a genie fills with love, the gods with hate. Their salutations stiffen her, leaving her prey to what they aim at her, down to the basest oval. The light in blueness, or in scum that flows from hollows. There is magic in a place where blades glint, hope still live deep in the voices. The long stretches, air so thick within, it loses any rhythm in the season's calm. A yellowness of air we cut through like a pair of hatchets. Somnambulism guides us, lethargy returns, a zephyr floating overhead. Something to envy, skulls that time has left behind, chameleons with diamonds on their bodies, Yiddish symphonies up from the depths, its waters bursting from a stone. They practice immobility. Grass covers earth like scales or wings. One thought, a thousand movements, forced vibrations in the sea. A hatchet clatters down, dispersing plumes of dust and sand. A plane above us, diving down.